Fireside Swift, better than a bag of nuts. Ding. I just came up with our jingle.
You know what that is?
That's the intro.
That's the start of the show right there.
I like it. What's up, y'all? I'm Zach.
And I'm Steven, and this is Fireside Swift. I said Steven again.
You did say Steven again. You
see, oh, well, it's staying in this okay. time.
I mean, we'll let him see. That's fine.
And someday, I will call myself Steve like I intend to when we do this podcast.
Or I should just introduce us both.
Or, you know what, that I'm totally okay with that.
Maybe that's how it has to go.
You're introducing us from now on, Zach.
You can't be trusted with the introduction.
I really can't.
I'll handle the introduction. You take everything else, and we'll call it a show.
All right.
Sound good?
That works.
I like it. So what's been going on, man?
Not a whole lot that I could think of. I didn't do my homework again this week.
Oh, I'm so disappointed in you. You know, it's getting to the point...
No, but you really shouldn't be anymore.
It's getting to the point where I'm thinking about calling your parents. We're going to have to bring them in. Have a little chat, and you know, we will make a good student out of you yet.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, that's about all I got. I really wasn't gonna follow through on that. It sounds like too much work. Herculean task.
But luckily, and I guess you know, we should probably let everybody else into our dirty little secret. Zach writes amazing notes.
Thank you. I think amazing is a little far-fetched, but thank you.
So I don't have to do my homework because you do it for me.
That one week where I decide not to do it, it's going to be a good one.
It's going to be like a 5-minute podcast.
It's going to be a real good one. And if that's what we put out, that's what we put out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. No, I the good news is I enjoy writing the notes. It helps me learn. So that's what I'm here to do. I want to learn myself and maybe teach someone else along the way.
You know, and I do feel like you definitely get more out of that than I do. When I do notes,
so you're saying it's my job indefinitely? Is that what you're saying?
Indefinitely. Okay. Yes.
All right, I wanted to make sure I was reading that situation correctly. All right.
I'm okay with this. It's a good division of labor. Because honestly, I was the worst note taker in school. Like just. The absolute worst note taker.
I wasn't the best, but now that I'm speaking in front of virtual hundreds, apparently, virtual tens.
Tens,
yeah.
Tens.
And if there's a glitch, hundreds.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Possibly hundreds.
Then I want to make sure that I'm at least not completely, you know, tripping over myself.
Do we want to talk a little bit about the glitch?
Let's not right now before until we really know what's going on. We'll have to do a little research. Just so you know, everybody, something happened behind the scenes. We're not sure what's going on, and
there's one person who's just downloading hundreds of
someone out there
at 6 in the morning.
Someone really loves us. Hey mom, thank you so much.
Yeah, right. Actually, no, you know who it is? It's Rob.
It's got to be Rob.
It's definitely Rob.
It has to be. He left us. We have a review now.
Yeah, we do. We have one 5-star review. So thank you, Rob, for leaving that awesome review. And he didn't just leave the stars either.
No, it's a full on he wrote an essay.
You know, and I was thinking that same thing. Like I took AP English in high school, and I couldn't write something that nice.
I'm right there.
Such
with
a nice
you.
Note.
I did not take AP English in high school. But
by the way, that was the last English class I took.
way to finish off strong.
Yep.
So thank you, Rob, so much for that.
Thank you, Rob.
It is greatly appreciated.
Yeah, really enjoyed reading it. Thank you for your kindness.
So you get the gold medal. Everyone else out there, just so you know, silver and bronze still available.
They are.
We'll
get
see.
Get them while you can.
We'll see. So has anything gone on recently with the Swiftcoders Network?
Yes. Swiftcoders Network has grown by one more podcast.
Yes.
Steve and Sherry just released the Learn Swift podcast.
Okay.
His first episode features Victoria Herrick.
Yes.
I know Victoria from my meetup. She goes to several of the meetups.
Dynamite!
Yeah.
I really wanted to do that. Ever since I heard that episode, I've been wanting to just scream that into the microphone.
Well, there you go. You got it.
I feel so much better. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go download that episode, listen to it, and smile as much as I did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. Both of them did an amazing job. I listened to it as well. Literally the other day, I should have listened to it before that, but I've got a lot of podcasts and finally got onto my list. I'm like, yeah, I got to listen to it. It was really neat hearing Victoria's side to all that. Even though, like, I've talked to her on many occasions, it's really neat to hear her thoughts as Steven asked her questions.
Yeah, it's really cool seeing her journey, you know? And what's even crazier is not only did Steven put out episode one, he put out episode two.
Yeah, so...
He went
to that one yet.
Yeah, back to back. Mark Opon. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I'm probably butchering.
So what you're telling me is I'm like really behind.
Yeah, you have one to catch up on, and may be releasing another one this week. I don't know. You're just going to fall further and further behind. That's why you do your homework. So in Mark's episode, he kind of tells his story as an up-and-coming Swift developer. He talks about how he moved from Orlando to New York City, the reasons behind that, and... you know, his transition from a sysadmin position to maybe more of a Swift developer and where he's at and where he hopes to be.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to listen to that. That sounds amazing.
No, it is. It is. Go, in fact, listen to it right now.
Okay.
Is it over yet?
I'm just gonna go silent. So
okay. I'll take over.
Yeah, take it away from here.
Okay. I'm lost. Can you come back? Oh, no. All right, well, looks like y'all are all mine. You can blame Steven for this. The next 5 to 10 minutes of your life, they are what I dictate. So, all right, come back, Steven. Come back.
All right,
they're
I'm
yelling
back.
For you. They
I'm
need
back.
You.
All right, so do we have any other feedback?
I think that is it for now.
All right, so we threw a few logs in the fire there.
Yes, get it nice and toasty, nice and warm.
Yep.
Everybody, get comfortable.
Yeah, get comfortable because we're about to talk about one of the base architectures of iOS development.
Yes, we're talking about the MVC pattern tonight.
Yes, massive view controller pattern.
Mini valuable coin pattern.
Mighty varicose cockroach pattern.
Mega Viking chopper pattern.
Most valuable clown pattern.
Oh, that's a good one. I actually like that one. Okay, no. In all seriousness, it stands for the Model View Controller pattern.
Yes, Model View Controller. This is like Apple's favorite design pattern, I think, because that's the basic app architecture that they push.
Yes.
At least it seems that way to me.
And it makes sense for them to push it, right? Because it's very straightforward. And if you're writing an app using the MVC pattern, you know where you need to silo all of the functionality of your app, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think the main thing with this is it does actually add complexity. So, you know, you say it's very straightforward, but to somebody who's brand new to coding, to programming, why not just slap some views on there and like connect as much, as many objects as you can and just get it working.
That's true. But when I say straightforward, I mean, it's easier to grasp than say your MVVM or your Viper or any of the other crazy acronyms out there that you can use to build an app. Just so you know, I have no real idea what either of those two are. I'm sticking with MVC.
Yeah, so I did look at what Viper looks like. It is insane.
I believe it.
There's a lot of things that look pretty neat about it, but my goodness, there's like 7 layers.
Oh.
Wait, no, Viper is 5 layers, right?
I'm getting hungry.
But I don't even know how it is. But it is ridiculous how complex just setting up that architecture is.
Oh, no. See, then that's...
Or MVC is much more... simple.
And that is why I'm an MVC guy. Just I want something straightforward. Take me from A to B and with the least amount of stress possible. I'm sure I will learn those other architectures as I become more adept at writing Swift programs.
I think one of these days we'll probably do shows on those. So, yes, you'll have to learn them because you'll do your homework. I won't. I'll just read the notes.
No, those are the shows I'm going to opt out of. See, right now what I'm doing is it's called building up goodwill.
Oh.
You get that ball rolling. And then if you back out on one later, you say, oh, yeah, sorry, couldn't get it done. But look at all the other stuff I did. You know, Steven really should have picked up the slack there.
I see how it is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm being just completely upfront with you. So,
all right. So why would I use MVC over just banging something out?
Okay. So if you want to have code that is incredibly hard to maintain, is incredibly hard to read, you're not sure exactly where any bugs are that crop up in your code, then, you know, feel free. Just go ahead, write all of your functionality of your entire app in just one file and let all of the different views call to that file and call it a day, right? However...
And you use tons of singletons,
oh,
too.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's a singleton. if you would rather have code that, you know, you'll be able to debug in 6 months, or you will be able to extend in some way, you know, add a feature to later on down the road, use the MVC pattern.
Another thing I'd like to add on top of that is if you want to work in a team, you would want to use an architecture. Now, MVC is not the perfect way of doing this, but it is possible for, you know, one person to work on just models while the other one's working on views with the view controller, or one person's working on one set of model view controller, like one component that is a model view controller, and another, you know, person's working on another model view controller component. Those can technically fit together, so it's more modular.
Exactly. And so just like the pattern itself, you can, you know, separate concerns by team or person and then let them attack their code without worrying about the repercussions or ramifications you'll have on someone else's code if you're working in the same file.
Yep, absolutely. What are the drawbacks, though? I mean, like, this all sounds like really great, you know.
So
why wouldn't I do this?
So the biggest issue, and you alluded to it earlier in the segue, which was beautiful, your view controllers, which are the pieces of code that will sit between your model and your view, they can get very, very, very large because they are what is tasked with basically handling all of the communication between the model and the view and updating each and making sure everything's just synchronized through your app.
Yeah, yeah. And this is super common. It's so common that, Zach, you were starting to tell me a story earlier.
Yes.
I think this is a great time to revisit this. I want to hear the whole story. So why don't you start from the beginning?
Sure.
What did you hear about massive view controllers?
So right when I first started to learn Swift, I found a meetup in the area. It's way more advanced than I probably will ever be. But I wanted to go and just kind of expose myself to it, learn some concepts, maybe meet a few people, you know, get a mentor. And then, you know, Steven came along, so I didn't have to worry about that anymore. Anyway, so I showed up and...
Here's what your mentor says. Stop doing homework.
That may be some of the most valuable advice I'll ever get. I don't know yet. I have to take it into account first and actually practice it. So this guy had built an app for his iPad that would control, it's called a woodpecker toy. And so there's a woodpecker that bounces back and forth and pecks basically a pole. And as it pecks a pole, it drops itself to the ground. Okay. And apparently this was a more common toy a little earlier on. But his idea was to build the world's largest woodpecker toy because You know, if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing.
Of course. So
to do that, he had this massive, probably 4-inch diameter steel pipe, and he had his woodpecker toy all milled out, but he needed a way to get it to the very top of the pole, and he wanted it to be something like 60 feet, I believe. So it's, I mean, it was big. And it's not something you can just, you know, grab a ladder, push everything up, and let it go. So what he did was he had some hardware, some gears and wheels on the bottom of that woodpecker toy that can be controlled via iPad through a Bluetooth connection to some other hardware. Yeah, I know. It was amazing. And I was sitting there as a completely, like, brand new Swift person thinking, I am in so far over my head, I can't even see the surface. Like, the sunlight is gone. I'm down with those bottom dwellers, you know, those the angler fish with the crazy teeth. That's where I was. Anyway, so he went through the software side of things, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll be able to pick up something here. And he didn't have any real, like, data to model. It was basically just functionality for the woodpecker toy itself.
Okay.
And he showed his view. It had all of the dials and switches on it that he needed to get his woodpecker toy from point A to point B, and what he would do in an emergency. Like, he had stop buttons and all this other stuff. And he's like, and now let's go into the code that is tied to all of the stuff in the view. And it was like a 3,000 line file. And he was like, it's a massive view controller, right, everybody? And everybody just bursts out laughing. And I'm just kind of sitting there, like, just kind of glancing around nervously, like, what are we laughing at? I don't understand. Like, yeah, I mean, it's big, but what's the joke here? So I didn't really get it until more recently when I realized that the major drawback of this MVC design means that sometimes that view controller can get rather unwieldy.
Yeah. that's, I mean, 3,000 lines is...
Yes.
Very massive.
Yeah, no, it was real big. He had you know, stuff with his own personal protocols that he had written. It was calling into other, and I mean, I think the idea was, you know, he was going to keep it lightweight, and then he had scope creep.
Oh, and it
bloated
reality.
Yeah, it got out of control. So, and I have a question for you.
Yes.
Being the experienced Swifter you are.
Okay.
If you are writing a view controller, and you start to realize that it's getting kind of verbose, getting rather long. When do you go back to the drawing board, or do you go back to the drawing board?
yeah, that really depends on how much time you get to refactor.
Okay.
If you're working for a company, well then. Possibly never,
right?
Depending on you know, how quickly your company's moving, or if, you know, if they spend time, you know, give you time to fix your code, which isn't always. I mean, just like one of the things I've noticed with companies is usually it's, you know, you're either adding features or you're fixing bugs.
Yes.
But rarely do you get time to go, okay, and make your code much, much nicer.
Yes.
You don't get. You kind of have to grab those in little chunks, and because you only get like a little, you know, like if you, for instance, my company uses Agile, and so we run off of 2-week sprints. If I get done with my sprint and I've got a little time left, you know, I finished all the things that I've committed to, I might have a little time there that I can pick, you know, one thing that I want to refactor.
Okay. And how would you go about refactoring?
Well, I would say usually there's something bigger that I want to refactor than, you know, a working view controller that just happens to be really long.
Okay.
Which, you know, that take it or leave it. I mean, there are some major downsides to having really large view controllers. Obviously, it's not very testable when you get that.
Mm-hmm.
It can be unwieldy and does far more than it should. So maybe it should be broken down into smaller components. You know, another side of this too is, like, if you're not working for a company, you're working for yourself. Well, if you're trying to earn money that way, you definitely probably don't have enough time to do this because
you got to meet deadline.
Yeah, exactly. You got to make another app and make another app. So really what happens is the next time you write a Vue controller, you remember how massive you made this last Vue controller, and you're like, I'm not going to do that again. And hopefully you learn something from the last time.
So would a good design and documentation possibly be something that would help you avoid, you know, letting your Vue controller get so massive?
That definitely helps.
Or is that more of a pipe dream where you're like, I have this documentation. No. If I just stick to it, then I'll be good.
So one of the things I learned, and I'm trying to think, I think it was in business school, because I actually got my undergrad degree in business, was how much time Japanese companies spend planning as opposed to American companies. And it's something like, I'm not going to get it right, but it's just massively more planning than right. American companies. And so American companies tend to have a very hard time working with Japanese companies, because when American companies get a job to do a project, they're like, all right, we did a little planning, let's go.
Right.
why are we standing here talking? Let's get something done. Whereas the Japanese company will spend months and months and months, you know, thinking about it and talking about it and planning and, you know, writing documentation before they've ever written a single line of code.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
More often than not, the Japanese company will deliver the product on time and under budget.
That's usually where you want to be.
More often than not, the American company will be late and over budget.
So what you're saying is that it may be beneficial
to plan a little.
To plan just a little bit. So
get your ideas on paper. Think about what you're going to do before you do it. I use OmniGraffle a lot. OmniGroup is a great company that makes Mac apps and iOS apps. And to me, they definitely make the most professional iOS apps out on the market right now. And so I use OmniGraffle for myself to diagram all my Vue controllers and how they interact and, you know, how they talk to the model. And that way, at the end of the day, when I'm working on this, I have a plan forward and go, oh yeah, this Vue controller is supposed to talk to this guy over here, and there's going to be a delegate to talk back, and so on and so forth.
Okay, do you think you can drop a link to OmniGraffle in our show notes? Because
we'll throw that in the show.
I would like to see that, because so I you know, I'm writing my own app, and I did some planning, but mm-hmm. not to the extent I probably needed to.
Okay.
Excuse me. So I knew I wanted to use the MVC architecture, but being new to Swift, I wasn't sure exactly how to write that up in a design doc. So I had a very, very, like, just abstract, this is what my model will be, this is what will be on my view, I think, and this is how I think I will want to tie them together. So
along those lines, my first app that went into the App Store, I had in my head, I learned off the Big Nerd Ranch books. By the way, I absolutely love the Big Nerd Ranch books.
I second that.
Yeah, that's how I learned to code. And I thought, because Big Nerd Ranch taught this to me, I used MVC. Right. And so I was convinced that I practice good MVC when I had made this app. And I had a buddy who knew Java, and he was going to do the Android version of this app for me. And so, like, we had our own little company, and he was going to convert my app to Android. And I was like, don't worry about it. It's just simple MVC. You'll be able to copy it, no problem. Let me make a diagram for you.
Oh, I would love to see that. Is that diagram hanging out anywhere?
Oh God, I gotta find it. I don't know where it is, but if I could find it, I'll definitely show it to you, because I was so wrong. I had references to objects that I should never have referenced to. I got done making this diagram. I don't even think I got done. I stopped at some point and went, how the heck did this thing ever work? And it rarely crashes too. So I'm like, how?
So what? You did do it right.
Yeah, right?
You just created you created your own architecture.
Yeah, so I did what we were talking about before, where I had a hodgepodge of things, you know, all interacting in some weird way, and it didn't crash and didn't have, I mean, if it had memory leaks, it wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice it, and I don't think anybody else noticed it, but like, it was not a good architecture.
So what you're telling me is it was a pile of ugly code, but it was a working pile of ugly code?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm so proud of it. I mean, it was a great app. Unfortunately, it's not on the App Store anymore, so I can't advertise it or anything like that. But if you're around me and you want to see it, I'll show it to you because I still have the code.
I would love to see that.
This is why after that experience, I have needed to for myself, diagram out how the app is going to work before I even start working on it.
And that's a smart idea. And that's something that I know I could do a lot better. Make it a better habit of doing that. The problem is, you have an idea and you're so excited and you're just ready to jump in. And the problem happens once, you know, all of that excitement fades away and it burns out. And, having a bad architecture can actually feed into that burnout if you're trying to triage bugs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so that quick start that you had when you were all raring to go can actually work against you.
Absolutely.
So,
like I was going to say, it's a discipline. It's like working out. When you get started, you're super excited. You know, it's New Year's resolution. You're like, yeah, I'm going to go to the gym every day.
January 1st.
Bring it. Yeah, exactly.
And you spend all December eating because you're like, January 1st.
Yep. Yep. And let's say you start out excited and you're working on it. But if you don't have that discipline to keep going, you'll stop.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, come time for summer, you don't have that beach body.
Summer. Yeah, I mean, like, because, you know, January 18th rolls around and you're like, do I really need to? Then all of a sudden it's April and you haven't done it for a couple of months and you think, well, what's the
Easter
point now?
And you get all the candy.
Yeah,
and
exactly. So what you're saying is designing Swift apps is the same as working out.
Absolutely.
Okay. Will it give me just like a ripped abs?
It'll give you brain abs.
Oh, brain abs.
You know those wrinkles?
Is that what those are?
Yeah, each one of those is an app.
I think I just have the one crease right now.
So, like, you're either ripped or you know, you don't have enough wrinkles there.
Okay, I'm gonna have to get myself a wrinkly brain. Is that something you really want?
And you flex your brain and your head just so it gets all weird.
I love it.
That's go ahead and do that.
So that is MVC. As
that was a really high level look at it. Right. We should probably delve
that's it as into kind of a philosophy, right? Like the reasons behind choosing MVC as the architecture you use in your app.
Absolutely.
So
let's take them component by component. Okay. And I'd like to always start with the controller.
All right.
So let's start with the controller because the controller
why do you like
is
starting with the controller?
The central hub.
So
it is this okay. It's the central hub.
Okay.
Like this is what connects the model and the view.
Okay.
So this is, and this is where most beginning iOS developers start too, because what's the first class that any tutorial tells you to write in when you start a tutorial for iOS?
The view controller?
View controller. Yeah. Not even the view controller. It's called view
right,
controller.
Right, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they
they don't even give it a fancy name or anything like that, like main view controller. It's view controller.
View controller. Yeah.
Yep, and so that is the controller. And so what is the controller? It's that communication layer that allows the user to interact with the view and uses the model to update the view.
Okay.
So yeah, so that is its sole purpose. And so it alone has knowledge of the view and the model, but neither the model nor the view have knowledge of the view controller.
Okay.
Does
so
that make sense?
It does. So it's there to synchronize the view and the model to make sure that what the user is seeing is what the app has in memory or, you know, wherever.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Well, okay, so what you're trying to say with whatever is the model.
Yes.
The model is the data in the app. Like, what is the app supposed to be? Like, what is it supposed to do? That's the model, like the logic behind everything.
Okay. So the model will hold the actual objects you use when you're writing, and it'll hold the data and the functionality for those objects, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so if I want to manipulate a piece of data in an object, I need to make sure that I'm doing it through functionality written inside the model and not functionality written in the view controller.
That's how you're supposed to do it. Now, we all take shortcuts and we will put some logic within our view controller, but to stay strict with model view controller, you would have that functionality in the model. And then the model, we'll talk about in a little bit how the model can talk back to the controller, but the model, like the controller will say, model, do this do this functionality for me. And then when it's done, it reports back to the controller and says, all right, here's your answer.
Okay. And then the controller can then pass that along to the view.
And the view is pretty obvious. This is what the user sees and can interact with.
Right. That's the screen. That's the UI, the UX, all of your buttons, switches, labels, everything.
Yep.
Okay. And so the view is just there as a display port for what the view controller tells it to do.
Correct.
Okay.
And yeah, it allows the user to also interact with the view controller. So, and there's an interesting coupling here with the view and the controller, because the model is not allowed to have any knowledge of the view controller, of the controller at all.
Right.
Like that's strictly prohibited.
Right.
On the other hand, with the view, there's a pattern, and we talked about it a little in episodes past, the delegate pattern.
Okay.
Where a view has a reference to its controller. Now, I mean, you can say, wait a minute, we said that that's not allowed.
Right.
Well, it is to a little degree. I mean, in this case, it's controlled communication. The view does not actually know it has a reference to its controller. It knows it has a reference to an object that adheres to a protocol, a very strict, small amount of commands that it can send.
Okay.
Whereas the controller knows everything about the view. It knows what its type is. It knows what it can do with it. It can delve in and get information from it, like what state it's in, whereas the view has no knowledge of its controller at all, except that I can send this message to it, and this message
and
to
so
it. That's it.
So these delegates usually come with like the will or should or did kind of keywords. Not keywords, but they're usually in that function name. So, will, view will appear, view did appear,
Well,
that type of thing?
No, I'm thinking like a table view controller, did select row at index point, like that's a common one. I have tapped on a cell in a table view, and I need to be able to tell my controller that this thing has happened.
I gotcha.
So you have a delegate that did select cell in index path. That's a super common one that most people will use. The table view knows that there's a controller and knows it can call that method, but literally that controller can have any number of methods beyond that one method.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. IB actions, like if you put an IB action on a button, would that be considered another way of view?
That's essentially a delegate. Okay. There's probably semantical differences there, but that's essentially a delegate. You're saying like there is one method that I know that my controller has, and it is, you know, the what's the did oh what is
was it the one you
I'm trying to think of when you push it it's what there's a whole plethora of different things on a UI control object, and that's a type of view, and it's when you lift your finger up off the button, right?
Yes. So like the touches touch are you talking about like touch up inside and that kind of stuff?
Touch up inside, that's what it is. Yeah, that's the common one that most people use.
That's all I've used so far. So anything outside of that, I'm done.
Yeah, but there's actually a whole bunch of them that you could do.
Okay.
And Xcode makes it so it's really easy to connect those. And you could connect multiple to it. So it's actually maybe more of a listener type pattern than a delegate type pattern. But in this case, there's a subset of methods that this view knows and will call regardless of anybody listening to those. And it just so happens that you have set it up where your controller listens to that.
Okay.
So in this case, the view, the button, does not have any knowledge of its controller.
That makes sense.
Yep. And then with a model, there's a couple ways you could return data there as well. Because the controller has complete knowledge of its models, it could either dive into that model and literally call methods on that model and say, what's the answer to this? What's your state? What's, you know,
okay, you know, yeah.
Asking a bunch of stuff and literally just get a return value,
right,
and use that. Another way is if that model is going to take some amount of time, some non-finite amount of time, you could implement a notification pattern.
Okay. So, and what I've heard of this pattern before, but I don't really know the details behind it.
It's a little confusing to me when I first learned it because it's not notifications like you would see on like the top of your phone or
right. So you like send me messages. A text and I get that badge or whatever coming across.
The not phone. Like that at all.
Okay.
Within iOS, there's something called a notification center,
mm-hmm.
and within your app, you can create a reference to that notification center and post notifications on it. And you could also have objects within your app listen for notifications. And so you could have a model go off and do something that takes, you know, let's say it takes 15 seconds to do something. So you can set it off on that task, put it on a different thread, let it do its thing, continue updating your view and doing other stuff. And when that model is done, it can post a notification that has a certain key to it, which is a string. And you can listen, to this notification center and say, hey, whenever, well, it's actually not listen, it's called observe. So you can observe the notification center and look for that specific key. And if that notification ever posts, you can get, there's a couple ways to do it. You could either have a method call after that.
Okay.
Or what I like about the new Swift versions of this is you could have a closure get called and you can run code within that closure.
Okay.
And you could also pass data between these as well. So there's a whole user info dictionary and the model can package away data in that, call the notification. And then on the other side, where the controller is listening for this notification, it can get those values and extract them from the user info dictionary.
Oh, okay. And yeah. So, I've seen this spoken about some. Is this how multiple MVCs can share the same model?
Yes.
So the model runs out, it does its thing, it sets that notification. But that notification isn't a one-to-one communication pattern necessarily. Like it can be.
Not necessarily.
But it can also be one-to-many where multiple view controllers will pick that up within your app.
Yes.
Okay.
That's not the only way that multiple controllers can use the same model. Another way is when another view controller starts up another view controller, it can pass the model between the two.
Oh, okay.
So oftentimes we do that. Well, I won't say oftentimes. This is something you probably should do. Is something called dependency injection. You should probably inject anything that that next view controller is going to need upon creating it.
Okay.
And that's probably for a different time. Like that's
yeah.
It's a cool sounding name too.
Dependency injection. I'm going to inject the dependency.
Exactly.
And I've actually done that, but again, had no idea what it was called.
Yeah, when I think of dependents, I think of like tax time, and yes. So like dependents are children, yep. And I'm injecting the children
into a controller. Gotta keep them inoculated against those taxes.
No, the children are the ones getting injected into.
That's just a really big syringe.
Very big syringe.
So are you trying to protect yourself against children? Is that what I'm hearing?
Inoculating myself against children.
Okay. that's one way to do it. So
it is.
You got a business. You have a business undergrad. I have a biology undergrad. So
this is possible.
This is absolutely possible. We handed out giant syringes on the first day of class every semester, specifically for injecting dependents.
That was also for the cootie shot.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of that going around. Keep yourself safe.
Yeah. All right. So I think we covered everything. One of the things I wanted to say before we get too far away from this is controllers can control other controllers as well.
Okay, controllers can control other controllers.
Yes. So
do you mind unpacking that one a little bit?
So remember how we talked about the controller having complete knowledge of its models and views, but those can't know the controller?
Yes.
It can be the same way with another controller. So one controller can start up another controller and know everything about that controller and potentially pass information to it, like we talked about dependency injection. It can pass models. It could even provide the view. It's possible for that, but usually that's not the case. And so you could start up this other controller and know everything about it. And literally the first controller can have input on the second controller. But the second controller is not allowed to know anything about the first.
Okay.
Do
you know of a situation where you would want to do that off the top of your head?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
If it's that common, then you must have a situation.
Usually you'll have one controller that, let's take an address book, right? You've got a view controller that sets up the table and has all the names.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you tap on a name, it opens up another view controller with all the contents of that name, right?
Oh, okay.
So the first view controller, in order to even get to the second view controller, that first view controller needs to pass the name, the model of that, what was in that cell to that next view controller.
Yes.
And that other view controller doesn't know anything about the first one except that it was given this information.
Okay.
And on top of that, there's a navigation controller that pushed the second one on the stack. So there's even a view controller above all this that has knowledge of the views underneath it. So
I heard you like controllers, so I put some controllers in your controllers? That kind of situation?
Absolutely. Yes. And you could even have, and this is like where you can get, we're talking about breaking up view controllers.
Yeah.
Let's look at an iPad where you've got potentially multiple places to put, views. You can have each one of those views be a view controller.
Right.
And be independently controlled.
I haven't even thought about touching, that side of iPad development because it seems like things can get very complicated very quickly where it's like, well, you can, have it in portrait mode, then you turn it in landscape mode and slide things in and out, and yeah.
Yeah. So my company has got an app that is universal. We support iOS 9 and up, so that means we have to support the iPhone 4S.
Oh, so tiny.
As well as the iPad Pro, the 12-inch one.
How many iPhone 4S screens can fit in one iPad 12-inch screen.
A lot.
Okay.
And yet, this one app has to work for all of these device sizes.
Makes sense.
And on top of that, there's also the, what's it called? Oh, I can't think of the word right now, but you know when you split screen?
Yep.
So it also supports all that. And those are different sizes too.
Right. And that's what I said I'm not even attempting to touch right now because that, yeah. It seems like it gets hairy quickly.
It does. And, you know, one of the things that we have is there's a data bar at the top of the iPhone version that we move to a sidebar for the iPad version. And you got to think about that. Like, if you switch from split screen to one of the thin split screens, like, you know, if you go from like regular app, you know, iPad app to a split screen that's really thin, it's actually going to go into iPhone version.
Right.
And so you need to be able to transfer that data between the two. And so that's really two independent view controllers. Actually, three. I mean, yeah. You've got the, you know, the one underneath, you know, underneath the data, you have the data, and then you've got the data that's potentially on the side panel.
Yeah, that sounds complicated. And can't the iPhone 7S also do that?
Well, the 7S is not out yet. Well, so I don't know if they're going to call it that.
Don't tell anybody. I've got it right here. I've got it landscaped. It looks great.
You mean the 7 Plus?
7 Plus, yes.
The 7 Plus will go into essentially an iPad mode-ish when it's turned sideways. So, you know, I haven't even looked at that. I would assume that would actually... I have to look at that again. I don't think... Oh, I could be wrong. I believe it actually goes into essentially a mini iPad mode when you turn it sideways.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so we get that side panel.
I hope you've got some free time at the end of this sprint.
I don't want to play with that.
Maybe a little bit.
But yeah, that was a real challenge. And if it weren't for the fact that we had stuck with MVC, it would have been very difficult to implement that. Not that it wasn't, you know, not that it was easy because we used MVC. There was definitely some challenges to it, but it was definitely easier than if we had just, you know, quickly powered through some code.
Exactly, because you knew where everything was and where it needed to go.
Yes.
You know, getting it there was a challenge, but you could at least say, all right, this piece we're going to put over here. This piece we're going to put over here. Now let's get them there.
Yep.
So you had it broken down to the point where it was reusable.
Yeah. And one of the things that MVC provides is just a set of rules, right? Like, you're allowed to violate it left and right. Like, nothing's going to stop me from, you know, doing it wrong where I've got a child view controller that has a reference to its parent view controller. Like,
right.
That's against MVC rules, but I could do it.
Right.
You know, nothing's going to stop me.
Yeah, there are no Swift police that I am aware of.
There's the app review, right?
So right.
If I do that too often, I'm going to have retain cycles, and that's not good.
Right.
It's a set of rules, and if you adhere to them, it's going to make your job a little easier.
So it's a smart thing to do because I enjoy easy.
Yes.
Keep it easy, people.
I don't know if I would actually call it easy now that I think about it, but...
So you let me just walk out on that limb and then you just cut it out from under me.
This takes a lot of thinking, right?
True.
Like, it's not...
True.
You know, it is easier than going through it, you know, line by line and spaghetti code.
Exactly.
But,
that's what I'm talking about. Is it easier to write it once where, you know, more work went into it to begin with? But maybe you don't have to touch it as much, or when you do have to go back and touch it, everything is where you expect it to be?
Yeah.
I would say yes.
Yeah, I would say yes.
I would say yes, just get it set up right the first time.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so, I mean, did we cover everything essentially?
We covered the essentials of MVC. I'm confident in saying that.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. I feel like that, yeah, that... I feel like we did a good job there where we didn't, you know, ramble too much with it.
I don't know. I always feel one way as we're recording, and I switch back to the other way usually on playback.
Oh, so now I'm going to think we rambled.
Yes.
All right, cool. Yeah. I'm good with that.
I mean, it's fine.
It's not like I'm going to listen to this.
No, I mean, you can leave that up to me. I do the homework, I listen, you do the editing. It's like MVC. It's a separation of duties, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I'll be the massive view controller.
Okay. I'll be model?
You can model whatever you want.
All right. All right, so let's see. Is there anything else we need to talk about?
I do want to shout out Rob's review one last time. It just really means so much to both of us, if I can speak for you. To have a review in the podcast app, like, that's amazing to me. When we started this, we weren't sure whether we were going to reach, you know, 2 to 4 people or what it was going to be. And to get a review, it feels good. It feels like we're on the right track, at least.
Yeah. And, you know, we encourage everyone else. We would love to have your reviews as well. Now you've got, you know, Rob's to follow up, though. So, you know,
good luck.
It's brush a thing, up on those English
but
skills.
We also don't want to scare them away. You don't. You know what? If you just want to do 5 stars and, like, great, I'm perfectly happy with that. I'll take that.
And if you want to do 1 stars, please contact us first. We would love to know what we need to improve.
That works for me as well. That works for me as well. I just want to know.
Like we said in previous episodes, we'd like to reach as many people as possible. So we feel like this is good information, and hopefully you feel that way as well. We'd like to encourage more and more people that are interested in coding to get into coding. And so your reviews help us do that. So we appreciate every review we get.
Correct. We really love this language. We love coding in general. The more we can spread it to people who maybe were on the fence about it, if we can get someone to chase their dream of becoming an app developer, that would just make my life. Like, I want to hear that.
Yes. So I would love to hear that. Absolutely.
That would make me so happy. So we're going to keep at it. We could use a little help, you know, if you want to throw us a review, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Another thing we want to talk about is, we are part of the Swift Coders podcast network. So that right now that includes the Learn Swift podcast, the Swift Coders podcast, and a soon to be named other podcast that's on its way out soon, hopefully.
We will come. We will update once that gets a little more settled.
Yeah, don't listen to our other.
Yeah, don't listen to that.
Don't listen. We were totally wrong in that last episode.
We were very, very wrong, and so we are. We always reserve the right to be incorrect.
Oh yeah, we are incorrect most of the time.
Exactly.
So.
So please keep listening to us. But yeah, so right now we're sitting at 3 R's, Garrix, and then Stevens that we spoke about earlier, the Learn Swift podcast. Go out, give it a download, give it a shot. The stories are very interesting, and it's nice hearing that you're not in this alone. For me, I don't have too many opportunities to go out and be around people that are still learning Swift as a language. So that's kind of my virtual way to connect. And it makes me feel like, you know, I'm not the only one sitting in my office at, you know, 1:30 in the morning trying to figure out why this table isn't doing what I expect it to do.
Yeah. I'm lucky enough to live in a large city that has many meetups, and that's actually how I met Garrick, was at a meetup. But that wasn't always the case. Before I moved to LA, I was living in a speck of nowhere land, and I got, just like Zach, I got my, not that Zach lives in the middle of nowhere, but I mean, he does live in Texas, so
that's right.
You know, just throwing that out there. But I lived in a speck of nowhere, and I got, you know, my my feedback was same thing. I got it from podcasts. And that's how I learned that I wasn't alone.
Exactly. Speaking, do you know that El Paso, Texas is closer to California than it is the other side of Texas?
I did not know that, but wait, no, I did know that because I've made that drive many times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've heard about even just driving to, like, Austin is not, is way longer than that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a haul.
It's like 14 hours or something like that.
It's my home state and I love it, but my God, it's huge.
Yeah, it's crazy because I used to actually drive from El Paso to Los Angeles back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
We'll talk later about why I did that. But
so wrapping up the show, finally, Steven, would you like to give your Twitter information, sir?
No.
Okay, you don't have to. You can reach me.
Go ahead, Zach. You go first.
Okay. So I'm on Twitter. That's at ZFalgu1. That is ZF as in Frank, ALGOUT, and the number 1.
And you can reach me at SW Berard. That's B as in boy, ERARD as in dog.
And the show itself also has a Twitter account. It's fun interacting with people on there. I like to shout out any new followers. I try to be unique with each one, but it doesn't always happen. I like to think that I'm at least, you know, providing a smile to people's faces when I do that. And that is at @fireside_swift.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you all for coming out, and we'll see you next time.
Y'all have a good one.
I mean, this is how I felt about Lord of the Rings. Like, my dad loved Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Just like, absolutely loved Lord of the Rings. And I loved The Hobbit. I was a big fan of The Hobbit growing up, because I read it when I was, like, super young.
Right.
And I think my dad even read it to us, like, my sister and I, when we were kids, as bedtime stories.
That's a good one.
But, yeah, it actually really is. It's a good kid story.
It really is.
No joke. I'm not.
No, I know. I was being dead serious.
Yeah, The Hobbit is absolutely a kid's story. Did you know there's absolutely no violence in that book?
It has been so long since I've read it that...
I know, right?
It would kind That's of how surprise I was until me, I re- not really.
I reread it because the movies had come out and they were so god-awful bad. I was like, okay, I'm curious. I don't really remember the story of The Hobbit. I've seen two of these terrible movies. Let me read the book again to see how close they are. Turns out, like, it is as far from the books as you can possibly get and still, like, call it in the same realm.
Like, it's
not even close. Yeah, the themes are all wrong. There's literally no violence. Anytime there is supposed violence, it's after Bilbo had been knocked out. There's two times.
So
there's
he goes
two
down
times that happens
and then all the stuff happens. Yeah.
He wakes up and supposedly things happened. So like in the cave, he's on the shoulders of one of the dwarves and he hits his head on the roof of the cave and gets knocked out. He wakes up and all the dwarves are gone. And apparently they were running from the goblins. The next time is when there's that huge battle at the end of the book. It was like the Battle of the Three Armies. What is he doing? He's like, the battle's about to begin. He's like, he's getting to a position where he could see everything. And yeah. I think he's wearing the ring at this time. And a rock just like falls on his, like he gets hit by a rock. And he, like before the battle even gets, he gets knocked out and doesn't, like he wakes up, the war's over.
And our hero is laid low yet again by circumstance.
Yeah. still a great book. Anyways, I did not like Lord of the Rings. I read it through twice. Still just, it's an okay series.
I am with you, and I've spoken with my wife about it, and she kind of boils it down really well. It's a lot of running. Like, it's a lot of running. Like, and the parts that I wanted to have drawn out a little more are never quite drawn out enough.
Yeah.
And then there are some parts that I wish would be finished a little bit sooner, and then those tend to drag on for pages on end.
Did you know, like, when was the last time you read Lord of the Rings?
It was probably 3 years ago.
Okay, so it's still fairly fresh in your mind. That's about when I read it again, too.
Yeah.
Did you notice how much Tom Bombadil is in the first
book? Oh, my God, I was about to say, Tom Bombadil's everywhere, and he doesn't even show up in the movies.
I was just blown away. Yeah. It was like half the book.
Yeah. Like, and the other thing is, like, he is ridiculously powerful. Like, he's picking up the ring and playing with it and putting it on. He's like, it's whatever. And then nothing. Like, what? Like, that's one of the things I'm talking about. Like, I want to know more about that. And you don't get anything.
I just, that blew me away. Like, I remember my friends, like, complaining about it when the movies came out. I was like, I vaguely remember that guy. And then, like, like probably about 3 years ago, I decided to read it again just to see if I would like it again as I'm older, and to see if, you know, how much I remember the movies compared to the books. I want to remember the books more. So I read the books again, and I was just like amazed. Like, I'm like a quarter of the way through the book. I'm like, oh, here's Tom Bombadil. Okay, cool. This is where he should have been in the movie.
Right.
And then I'm like halfway, like, I'm literally like half the book later, so I'm at like 75% done with the book. We are still on Tom Bombadil.
Yeah. A lot of Tom there. A lot of Tom. And then it just cut him out completely. But, like, I have so many questions about Mr. Bombadil.
Yeah.
So many questions. And so that's one of those things that just never got answered correctly for me. I have a question for you. Who is the hero of the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
Oof. That's a good question. Gollum?
No. Not in my eyes. I think it's got to be Sam. It has to be Sam.
Because he helps Frodo to that last... Well, like, I mean, really, well, if it weren't for Sam, it would never have made it.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, if it... Sam is, like, carrying Frodo for, like, most of that last book.
Yeah.
And pushing him along. And Frodo would have given up so much sooner.
Oh, yeah.
And then Frodo doesn't even throw the ring into the mountain at the end.
Yeah, Gollum does.
Exactly. That, yeah. So it's like, Frodo never really did anything besides act tortured, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess.
And then he sails off with the elves at the end. And I'm like, Sam is the hero of that trilogy for me.
He's definitely a hero, if not the best hero.
And he goes in and he does it he does it with just love for his friend, no selfish reasons. He's there because he wants to help, and that's it. Like, he sees one of his friends going into trouble, and he knows that it's going to be a hard task for him to take on, and so he jumps in and says, "Let me help you." He has no reason.
He's definitely my favorite character. He's always been my favorite character in the series.
Yeah.
But you probably can't discount, like, imagine if somebody's carrying, like, a really, really heavy backpack, and they carry it for 100 miles, and then you carry it, you give them support, and you carry it for a mile here and there, but they carried it for, like, 97 miles, you know?
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, that book ends completely differently if
Sam totally. Sam has to be there, but so does Frodo. Like...
Well, that's the thing. Like, I feel like you can swap Frodo out with anybody.
But I'll bet you if Sam was the one carrying the ring, and Frodo, well, I don't know, Frodo would be the
exactly
Sam,
because
no, Frodo, nobody's as, like, loyal as nobody's as loyal as Sam.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, Sam has to be there. Frodo, I believe, in my mind, could be swapped out with any of the characters, and it'll probably happen.
Well, you can't swap him out with Gollum, because then the ring wouldn't even get there.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. So, okay, barring a few, I feel like if you swap Frodo out for
if you swapped Frodo out for Ned Stark, then
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't even need dragons or White Walkers anymore.
So my dirty little secret is I know very little about Game of Thrones.